brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Dan, welcome to the podcast. This is a co-hosted episode, not just between you and I, but between two institutions of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast, isn't it? Bedroom Battlefield's the kind of big podcast, and then we've got the plucky underdog Paint All the Minis. So yeah. How are you feeling about this episode today?
It's good, man. It's always good to talk to you. It's been a while since we did our last kind of chat together, right? I don't even know when it was. A couple of months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Coffee Table Books, I think, which...
Is that last
one? It was a couple of months ago, possibly. We did the non-violent video games as well, which was really good. So,
yeah.
And those episodes generated a lot of feedback.
Yeah.
Mainly that you're a complete
negative
slaver and nobody wants to have you back on. But here we are again.
Don't listen to the popular views. Just ignore it and push on.
Yep.
That's good, man.
But... How are you enjoying getting on the podcast horse? You seem to have hit the ground running again, getting lots of quality episodes out.
I think it's really important to publicly say thanks to you, man, for, you know, I'm not sure if you just felt sorry for me and invited me onto a show. I think I kind of had a lot of internet troubles and a lot of other things that kind of just made it difficult to record a show. So like, I didn't want to invite someone onto the show and then, you know, the internet cuts out or certain apps don't work or certain things. And then obviously kids being quite young as well, like, you know, they couldn't understand that I was talking to somebody even if they're asleep. So I'd only record when they're asleep, but if they woke up and needed me or wanted me, I can't be like, you know, just fuck off, go away, I can't talk yet. You know, I needed to obviously spend time with them. So I kind of put it on the back burner. But as we kind of spoke and I kind of got back into enthusiasm, I think as we spoke and as I enjoyed it, I just think I started to remember a lot more of the positive things and a lot more of the reasons why I like doing it. And so I just kind of, you know, I did a few of them myself and I kind of talked to you about those and I wasn't really sure what to do with them. I wasn't sure whether to, you know, I'd recorded a couple of episodes, but I wasn't really sure what to do with them, but I thought, you know, I'll just put it up on the Paint or Mini stream. And it was just nice, you know, putting them back up there. And then it was interesting just thinking about who I might invite next. And then it was kind of surprising in a really positive way that like I just put a few feelers out and said, hey, I'm thinking about recording shows more regularly again. Would you consider coming on to be a guest? And people said, yeah, like pretty much straight away, which was nice, you know, because that's always a little bit of a worry. You think about everyone's going to say nah, or people can't remember who you are. You'd be like, Dan who? Paint all the work? Nah, what you know about? Because, you know, stuff moves quite quickly, don't they? And you don't expect people to remember you because you're only like 1% of their week or whatever. So yeah, it's been really nice. It's been really good. So hopefully it will remain weekly for a good while now. I'm finding, you know, little places that I can record and little time windows during the week that I can record, and yeah we'll see. But it's just interesting, you know, seeing who's around, what's around, and kind of getting back into it. And that links nicely to the first thing we're going to talk about today, and that is like how and where do you find out about new stuff. Like, so in our hobby there's lots of things that come out, there's lots of things that we already have. But do you have like a set stream? Do you have like a set place to like find out about new stuff? Because you bought Hobgoblin recently, right? And we need to talk about that. That's maybe something that we can talk about at the back end of the show. But where do you find out about your new hobby stuff?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, if you're not like checking a Facebook feed or an Instagram feed, or you know, if TikTok is a thing in the hobby, it probably is. But finding out about new stuff is you maybe don't get hit with that fire hose. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, but I'm still able to generally keep up with stuff through, I would say, like podcasts are a part of that. You know, generally when someone's on a podcast, whether that's your show or somebody else's show, it's not that they're on there to promote something, but you will find out what they're working on. You will find out, you know, to an extent what's coming out from them. So that's a big part of it, I would say. The Discord community, you know, a lot of folks have their finger on the pulse of various things, so I'll see stuff in there. And even going really old school, like I subscribed to Miniature Wargames magazine, and at the start of the magazine,
yes, I remember saying that,
it has a, you know, new releases, whether that's games or miniatures or whatever. I did try and create a kind of feed. So there's a site called Feedly, and it's like an aggregator. So, you know, if you follow certain people's websites or blogs, you can curate them so that that comes at you. You know, you could download it to your Kindle and it's everyone. But not a lot of folk at this moment in time are just publishing content to their own websites. So it was a bit light on that front. And it wasn't necessarily to keep up with new releases, but just to keep up with what they were up to. But I say, the content and that, just the culture of the internet right now, I guess, the content's quite light on that front. So that's my end. What about yourself?
I don't really. Like, I think we could talk about this a while ago. Like, I'm really happy with the games that I have, you know, so I'm not really actively looking for other games. I couldn't tell you like where I go to find out about new stuff. Like, and that's why I wanted to talk about it, because I don't know. Like, this it's I always find it a hard balance, because it's interesting to find out about stuff, but you don't want to feel like stuff's being rammed down your throat every second of the day. Does that kind of make sense? So there are a few websites that you can kind of go to that collate stuff, but just found that a lot of the articles, and I'm purposely not going to mention because I don't want to seem like I'm poo-pooing anyone or anything like that, but there's a certain website you go onto and it just seems like clickbaity, and you actually click on something and it's just like regurgitated stuff from the original website, and it doesn't really add any value to it, and it just literally is a case of like a sales stream. Oh, these minis from this guy. These minis from this guy. And if I find that a little bit boring, to be honest, personally. But yeah, I don't know. So what was that website you said? Feedly.
Yeah, as in Feedly. But an L-Y at the end of it, yeah.
Feedly. That's quite a cool one. That's interesting. Because I used to enjoy a blog, but I'm not sure many people are blogging these days, especially within the game industry, right?
Yeah, I think folks are... You know, at the moment, certainly, I'm not saying it'll be like this forever, but people have kind of moved into more walled-off areas to do stuff like that, your mediums, substacks, etc. So the content is still being created. It's just maybe on a different type of platform. Still accessible, but it's just the way things are at the moment, I guess. But I'm the same. I'm not seeking to find out about new releases, because I don't really need anything else. Like, if something pops up and I notice it and it's cool, you know, I'll think about getting it. But I generally don't want more stuff in the main.
I think word of mouth is always the best thing. You mentioned a Discord group, and I need to give a shout, not that I'm anybody, but I need to give a shout to your Discord, the Bedroom Battlefields Discord's awesome, man. There's always people that, if you think about people that are genuinely actually doing the hobby, there's like a whole bunch of people that are genuinely actually doing the hobby. There's no like kind of pretense, there's no one kind of just making it seem like they're doing stuff. It just seems like a whole bunch of people that are just genuinely actually doing a hobby and having a really fun time between it, you know. So everyone that's on that group, awesome, and thanks to you to put it together and invite me across, makes it's really good community, really nice community.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you. See, I can't take much credit for it apart from literally just starting the thing, you know. It's the really good folks in there that have made it what it is. Special nod to Mark as well. He does a lot in there. Really, really nice guy. And he runs the Royal Orc live events, which are quarterly as well, and they're really good. So, it is a nice space. I think it was it before we started recording? I talked about this. I'm so senile, I can't even remember if this.
You were saying before. It's terrible, it's rubbish, you don't like anyone in there. Everyone, exactly, everyone bullies you. That's what you were saying. So I felt I had to kind of push back a little bit.
I know. I was saying it, and yeah, like I say, I must be going senile. I can't remember if I said this in the episode or before we started recording, but I wasn't sure if Discord counted as social media or not, and I don't really see it as such. But
I don't. That's that. I don't, and I guess that's because of the negative connotations I got with social media now. That I think social media, and I think shit. Basically, sorry to swear on your show, but like, I just don't like it how the thing that you're interested in is getting utilized and changed into something. Like, I started using Blue Sky the other week, probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I just want to look at little painted dudes. Like, I don't want to get into hot debate. I don't want to have any deep conversation with people. Like, I just want to see people that have painted little plastic people. Right? That's all I want to see. And yet my block list is hundreds deep at this point. And I don't mind if people have got political leanings or ideas. I don't mind that. I don't mind whatever you want to do on your social media. Like, that's totally fine. But I just feel like I'm bombarded by a whole bunch of stuff that I just don't want to engage with. And so I love Discord. No advertisements. There's no one kind of like, you know, windmilling a certain part of their anatomy. It's just simple, you know, people that are doing the same sorts of things that you, and it's very directed at the sort of area that you want to be engaged in, and it's just really cool. So there are certain parts of Blue Sky that are good, but yeah, I wouldn't class Discord as social media, and that's just because of the negative connotation that generally I have with social media these days. It's just rubbish. It's just, I don't, but you're not on any, all right? Is that right still? You're not on any other social media?
Yeah, I mean, I used to use it years ago. And I think even when I started, before the podcast, but when I started the website, I think I had a couple of half-hearted social media accounts for it, but never really did that much with it and gradually just stopped using it. And I don't regret that. Like you're saying, you know, Discord is very single use. Like a community exists around a topic or an interest, whereas a more broad social media platform, the utopian ideas, you know, well, keep up with your hobby, keep up with your sports team, keep up with, you know, politics and news and friends. And that's all nice in theory, but it doesn't work because, no, you know, everyone's so vehemently opposed to other things. And you put all these people and anything goes conversations together and it just ends up a complete rammy. And the creators of those apps, they just want you on there at all costs. So they're going.
Well, it's for someone else's gain, I think, isn't it? They take Blue Sky. I'm still getting used to it. But you take Twitter and Facebook. I don't think it's for my gain, really. I think at best it's a 50-50 kind of thing. And it really winds me up. It's like, well, you better tell us what ads you like, because you're going to get ads anyway. So if you tell us what ads you like, you're going to get ads that you actually like. And it's like, mate, that's not, no, bye. Really went through it anyway. We're getting off track. Like, but so yeah, I don't really have a set space that I kind of go and find out about this sort of stuff. I really like Joe McCulloch's blog, and he still continues to do that. I quite like that. Do you like anyone else's blogs? Is there any other blogs, or is there any kind of active rule makers or games makers that you like to kind of follow or keep up with?
Yeah, well, probably not as much as I should or would like to, but there are still, you know, I'm saying nobody's blogging, and that's not true. Like, if I go into the Feedly, there's a couple of really good bloggers, just independent bloggers, hobby bloggers like myself, especially in the sort of old hammer realm, who are still creating really good stuff. So there are good blogs out there. Carol, who's a member of the Discord, he's got the Chicago Skirmish War Games one, which is really good. So these blogs definitely still exist.
Carol.
They're maybe just not as, yeah. So they're maybe just not as plentiful as they probably once were. But yeah, Joe McCulloch's. I keep up with Mike Hutchinson as much as I can, although he does put out a lot of stuff. So I'm always getting emails through like Patreon and that he's released stuff, and I just never get around to, again, you've got to be quite deliberate with your time. You can't read and consume everything, or you'll just never do anything else. So.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, another place that people go to find out about new stuff is like game events, like Salute is coming up. So we're recording this on the 25th of March. I'm not sure when it's going to be out for both of us. But yeah, have you ever thought about going to like a big show like Salute or something? You ever thought about that?
No, I think it's just because it's not true to say they happen outside of Scotland, but a lot of them are in England. I know you get some of them up here. I'm sure there's one in Falkirk, which is pretty popular. I did go to Tabletop Scotland a few years running, although that's more about, as much as there were miniature games and stuff, it was
tables.
More about board games broadly.
Kitchen tables.
Just literal tables, tablecloths. So I don't mind events. I'm quite an awkward person though, where I go to them and I end up like I find it hard to speak to people on that. Like, you, especially like when you go up to somebody standing, they're not really that confident at engaging with you anyway, so you both just kind of shuffle about and then you wander off again. So
that is hard, isn't it? It is hard, isn't it? I think I mentioned that a few times. I've been to Salute and stuff like that, and I met certain people, and you know they're really busy, and you know that sort of event's pretty tiring. And I know that they're not really that asked about me, right? Which is fine. And that's not a me thing. That's just a generally speaking thing. So yeah, you got to have like a few base questions, and you got to kind of like, hey, how's it going? I really like your game. And yeah, it can be a little bit awkward sometimes, especially if they're like looking a bit swept off the feet, a little bit sweaty or whatever. Yeah, that's cool, man. But yeah, so I kind of wonder, it'd be interesting to know what other people have got, where they've got a Feedly or they've got other different things that they do. But how did you find, so what you talked about your three recent hobby purchases on a previous episode, most recent episode, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What were yours? What are your three?
So I bought some 15 mil miniatures that I saw in the magazine.
That
was literally stuff I was kind of in the market for anyway. So it was just good timing, I guess. And then it was some bases. So there's a company quite near me, War Bases, who do really good MDF stuff. And I've just known about them for years. I've been down to their shop and stuff like that. So, the buys that I made, there was nothing like groundbreaking about the way I kind of come across them, if that makes sense. What are the last three things you've bought?
Oh, mate, mine are really boring, mate. I'm just, you tell me, what game have I been talking about recently that everyone wants me to stop talking about?
Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, but three boxes of Song of Ice and Fire stuff, man. There's a new faction called Brotherhood Without Banners. So I bought their base box army set, and then they've got a heroes box, and they've got a cavalry unit box. Now that was a while ago, actually. I ain't bought anything new for a couple of months. Yeah, a couple of months. So yeah, there's mine. But yeah, like I found out about that just because I already know about it. It's a good game. Like, so yeah, there's no thing. Is there anything that's kind of come onto your radar that you've considered or thought about? And how did you find out about that?
No, not really. Not really. Because on like if we think about on the playing front, like Hobgoblin is a game that I definitely want to play more of. The fact that I've built armies for it and everything, and had one game and really enjoyed it. So if anything, I would like to dedicate more time just to going deeper with that. And I've also got two or three little skirmish rule sets that I've kind of created tentatively myself, and I would like to play more of them as well. So it would take a lot for a rule set to come along where I'm like, oh, I need to get into that, because frankly, I just wouldn't have the time. It's hard enough to find the time to play the games I already want to play. So
I think it's good, isn't it? It's good that you're not getting swept away. You're able to keep your feet. You're able to not get swept into stuff, and you're able to be like, for the amount of time that I've got to dedicate to this, this is what I can do, and this is what I can't do. Like, it's a pretty really healthy place to be. And I think all of us at different points in time, for various lengths of time, have been kind of swept away by stuff. And it's nice to be swept away with something, but it's really important to be able to, you know, get back on your feet and resist that tide at certain points. So let's talk about Hobgoblin a little bit, because that's something that you were excited about. That's something that we talked about, how in one of the shows you did previously about games maybe potentially changing in terms of being less crunchy, being a little bit more streamlined, being a little bit less of a time sink. I say time sink, and not in a negative way. Time sink sometimes seems in a negative way. But if you only have X amount of time to play a game, maybe it's better to actually finish a game than it is to play half of a big long game. And you know, when we talked about the different games, people said about how spending like 8 hours straight playing a game is exactly what people look for, and that's totally valid. But you kind of mentioned that you only have, and I kind of mentioned this as well myself, is that maybe 3 hours is a really good time length. So have you played that game? Is it what you wanted it to be? Is it what you thought it would be? Is it better than what you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, so it was Callum from the Discord. He came through from Glasgow last month, I think, and we had a game of it, and we both really enjoyed it. It was the first time both of us had played it. And I think a big appeal of this game for me is because I grew up, like, the first imagery that appealed to me in White Dwarf when I got my first one in, like, 93 was the big Warhammer battles, the big ranks of units and stuff. And I've went 15 mil for this rather than 28, but I think 15 mil is still just smaller, more room, cheaper, but still the same aesthetic from afar. I'm not saying when you pick up a 15 mil guy and a 30 mil guy, there's obviously going to be loads more detail in the 30 mil, but I think when you're standing around a table, there's not that much in it. And especially when you think about the difference in cost, the time they take to paint, etc. So it's a great skill.
I think they look better. Like, I think the mass battle games in 50mm, I personally think they look better. And what I also find as well, even if you're playing on a 4x4, or if you're sticking with a 6x4, there's more space to do stuff. I feel like sometimes if you're playing like a big mass battle game, you kind of don't feel like there's an ability to outflank or get around in different places. So playing 50mm on 6x4, it's pretty good, man. I really like that. And you still get that kind of old world feel. I'm with you, man. Like, I I don't really know specifically, but for me, like that old world setting, you know, the fantasy old world setting is really cool, man. And when you're seeing those big armies lined up, you know, it's really cool. Like I played Warmaster quite a few times, and Mayhem I've played a few times. I have the GW Battle of Five Armies box set. I managed to kind of find one of those that wasn't crazily priced ages ago. And I've got like a Rohan army, Rohirrim army, and I've got some Uruk Hai guys as well. So just seeing it in that scale is really good. It's a really good spectacle. It's really good, man. Yeah. So yeah, and all storage. You know, I've got a box and a whole bunch of stuff in there. It's just like, you know, storage, transport. There's a lot to be said for 15mm, man. It's good.
Yeah, yeah. Like I was just coming round to that. Like you were saying, the maneuverability, big one for me at this time of day. But exactly what you said. Like if you're parking a big row of 28mm troops over your table, the chances are you'll just really be moving forward together. There's no real room to flank or stuff. Whereas we found with this game on a 4x4, you know, you could take your horses away for a walk up the back and that, and, you know, turn round and flank and all sorts. So
what was the part as a Hobgoblin that you really appreciated and what really stuck with you as being positive?
I think I was pretty bought into it before I'd even played it, because it could have been rubbish
and then you're just like, I'm gonna like it anyway.
Yeah, probably because I listened to so much of Mike Hutchinson talking about games design. Like you know he really knows what he's talking about. He explains himself very well. I just like his gaming ethos, and you know, as much as the old Warhammer games, you know, they mean dearly to a lot of folks. A lot of folks still play them and love them. 30-odd years later, of course, we're going to have more elegant rule sets because people have learned a lot in that time. So,
I don't know, though. There's no guarantee that with time comes improvement, right? Does that kind of make sense? It's not guaranteed. I kind of thought that as a kid. I thought that, you know, everything's just going to get progressively better. Everything is going to get progressively higher quality, but it's not always true. So I think that the fact that you say you got more elegant rules, like I think you got more stuff to pull from for sure. You got more frames of references, but there's no guarantee that if something comes out today, it's going to be better than what something was 30 years ago, right?
No, it's not a foregone conclusion,
but you can definitely got some good stepping stones and background. So what have you liked about, do you feel like that kind of historical, when I say historical, I don't mean like Napoleonic era. Do you think that historical rule set stuff, and the kind of the picture and the movie reel of what the game should be is been built on by some, maybe some different rule principles? Would you say that would be true?
I don't know. I think, like, again, listening to Mike, and I'm just paraphrasing him when we could probably just hear him talking about it himself, but like it seemed to be that he wanted to recreate that White Dwarf battle report, you know, Warhammer battle report, but he wanted to create an experience where it could be done in a much shorter time frame and take a lot of the crunch out without losing the flavour. So I thought he pulled it off. Like, I played it, and you know, we didn't find ourselves in the book a lot. You know, there was the odd table to refer to when you're trying to hit somebody or that, but it started to flow really well. And a good sign of a game, I've mentioned this a few times now in the show, is you finish playing it and, you know, you go for a roll and a cup of tea in that, and your next thought is, oh, I'd really like to just play that again, is a great sign. So I got that with Hobgoblin, and Julie didn't play it again and haven't played it again since. But I've no friends, like you say, so there is a solo mode. I'll need to give that a bash.
That's cool, man. That's really good. So it's really good when you're excited about a rule set and then you get it and then it lives up to your expectation. That's really cool, man.
And that was it. Like the first game, and I'm not just saying this because I got beat, but the first game is about kind of learning how it works. And I think the second game onwards, it would be more about, okay, how can I actually
it takes ages. I mean, I play a Song of Ice and Fire every week and I still don't feel like I'm,
you still get beat every week. last time we spoke, you were getting a bit upset because the guy you were playing started trying
yeah,
I managed to upset.
Yeah, well, no, well, I had no right to. That's really important to know that I had no right to, but it's like I was just like, I'm whatever I've got painted that week, I'll take. So I'm not really thinking about list building too much, but he was really thinking about list building. And I think actually he was like going online and figuring out like what units have got, you know, the best kind of points cost to kind of output value sort of thing, which is fine. Like, I ain't got a problem with that. But I was just behind because it was like, I was just bringing like, oh, that guy looks kind of cool. I'll make him my commander. Where obviously if you're looking to actually have a competitive game, that's probably not the best practice. So yeah, I had to put it in. I had to kind of start thinking about lists. I had to start thinking about synergy. But then I think he got a little bit grumpy then. Because then I was like, I actually started doing pretty well. I started building lists with a certain synergy in mind. So yeah, in A Song of Ice and Fire, there's so many interesting aspects, Matthew. Let me tell you about some interesting aspects. No, but one of the things is condition tokens. So what you can do is there's various different ways that you can put a condition token on your opponent. So you can make them reroll their attacks, which is weakened. You can make them reroll the armor saved, which is vulnerable. And you can make them reroll their morale tests, which is panicked. So I created a list which was just intentionally just to dish out tokens, and he got a little bit grumpy because he was like, you condition tokens, it's bullshit, all this condition tokens. I was like, mate, you made this situation yourself, man. If you went building these really strong lists, then I would have continued just to potter around with whoever looked kind of cool. So you made this storm to come down on your head. But yeah, so I've started to kind of synergize with certain things and try and pick a commander and say, okay, this commander kind of is built to kind of do these kinds of things, and then picking units and picking NCUs, which are the non-combat units on the side, which are kind of like going to emphasize and amplify the intent of the commander. So that's kind of cool. I really like it, and I still continue to resist looking on the internet, man. Did you play video games as a kid? Did you play computer games as a kid?
I dabbled now and then, but never too seriously.
Yeah, sometimes. I remember like back in the day, it was like Resident Evil 2. This is probably like 1997, 1998 kind of time. I remember that like Resident Evil 2 came out as his PS1 era, and like Final Fantasy 7 came out. And I remember like, you know, struggling through that game. And then my mate was like, whoa, you want to get the guidebook. I'm like, guidebook? What are you on about, guidebook? He's like, oh, you get this guidebook? And it tells you where to get all the good bits. It tells you where to get all the good things. And I was like, I went to the shop and didn't buy it. I just kind of thumbed through it for about 10 minutes. And I kind of came away from it thinking, it's pretty sad, man, in my opinion. Like, you know, the whole point of the game is that you're trying to think about yourself. You're trying to master it yourself. You're trying to, you know, pass it yourself. And yeah, you might not 100% it. You might not get everything right. But, you know, you're creating a unique experience that only exists for you. And it's kind of like, I find that with list building. So I don't really, like, when I paint units, I purposely don't want to know the stats of the unit. I don't want to know if the unit's very good. Because if I know the unit is pretty shit, sorry, I'm swearing a lot on your podcast. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Sorry, man. I'm just pushing it. So when you edit it, I can see all the stuff that you've edited out to make it politically correct. I don't want to know if the unit's good or bad before I paint it. Because if I know the unit's bad or think the unit's bad, I'm not going to paint it as well. Not that I paint well anyway, but you get the idea. So it's like I pick a unit, I paint it, and then I play with it. And then if it does its job, if it kind of serves a purpose, if it kind of think it's got a good kind of like, you know, cost to kind of output, then I'll kind of keep it in the rotation for a little bit. So I'm really enjoying that. That's really cool. I'm just basking on The Song of Ice and Fire. Like, it's really, really good. Like, it's one of that was, it is now the best game I've ever played. It's the best game I've ever played, man. It's just so good. And then there's a new rules update coming on the 28th of March in a few days' time, and hopefully they don't kind of tinker around with it too much and wreck it too much. But even if you don't like the kind of Game of Thrones skin, like, don't let that put you off. Like, it's just really cool. So yeah, what you're talking about, how, you know, you start a new game and it probably takes 10 games, I would say, to really get the hang of not only the rules but also like what your faction does. So you decided to paint Nurgle, right? Nurgle type force. You've been painting that for a while, right?
That Nurgle warband is 28 mil, so they're more for skirmish games. Okay. So I've got, I do have Plague Bearers at 15 as well. So I'm building a wee Chaos army now at 15. Just going off the back of what you were saying there too, it reminded me of something. I've got the Hobgoblin book open in front of me now. Because that was one of his design principles, was that people have, I think he used Beastmen as an example, Beastmen from Warhammer Fantasy, saying like, cool miniatures always got terrible stats and they just got beat all the time. And so the idea of Hobgoblin is, you know, you could make your unit anything you want for a certain points cost. Like, there's light infantry, there's ranged infantry, there's heavy cavalry, there's monsters, there's beasts. So you just, you know, you look at your army and then you say, okay, that'll be that, that'll be this, that'll be that. And then you can add on little modifiers, little bonuses, or you can add negative aspects as well that will reduce the points cost. So you're building it around your miniatures. You know, your list exists because of your miniatures. You wouldn't go out and buy a box of something that you didn't necessarily like because they were the best unit, because you could just make the best unit with your favourite miniatures. So I really like that approach.
Yeah.
Cryo Volcano, a solo scenario that could be played with any sci-fi skirmish rule set and miniatures, is now available on the Bedroom Battlefields Patreon. It was originally published in Miniature Wargames magazine, and you'll now find everything you need to play it, along with a whole host of additional bonus content, over at patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. That's patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think that really fits in with the ethos that you say you're trying to create. Like, you know, it's making it a little simpler, making it a little bit cleaner, making it a little bit faster. You know, it definitely kind of jives with that. It definitely fulfills that brief, I think, doesn't it? But mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool, man. It's just good to. Do you think you will get to a point? Like, what is preventing you from playing more? Is it like, are you never going to be able to play more? Do you want to play more? Are you kind of working on those things that prevent you from playing more? Like, what's the crack?
Yeah, so the game of Hobgoblin that I got, that was Callum, who came through from Glasgow, and that's obviously, it's great that he did that, but it's a big ask. And it's obviously, it's easier to do the games of Hobgoblin through here because I've got all the armies, all the terrain and that. So not saying I wouldn't travel to do it, but it would just increase the time cost, especially when you got to wherever it was, a neutral venue. You have to set everything up and you have to make sure you've remembered everything and that. So
donkey only goes so fast as well, eh?
Yeah, so in terms of Hobgoblin, it is just, you know, maybe we have to be happy enough getting a game every month or 2 months, and that's fine. You know, I just have to be fine with that. And then,
do you want to play every week? Like, what do you want to play every week?
Well, I am able to play every week, you know, a solo game. I've got a couple of solo rule sets that I've created.
You'd be a great politician. Is a perfect pinnacle for you, like playing against somebody else every week? Is that something that you would like to do or not? You're not bothered about that?
I'm not. I think that the solo is never as good as playing against somebody or playing with somebody, but it still scratches the itch to an extent. So
we're talking about gaming, right?
No, I wasn't.
No, that's cool, man. Because I really like playing every week. Like, I really enjoy playing every week. I like the habit. I like being in the habit. I like being in the groove. I like playing once a week. Still playing my Polish mate on my map 44, by the way. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm starting to see the end of the list of scenarios. Mate, I need to actually count up like how many scenarios we played, me and my Polish mate. But I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I'm going to have to make sure. I might do this like live, like record it or something like that. Like when I finish the last scenario, like what's going to happen? I might just leave it and see if he invites me to the top of the list again. Then we just go through all the scenarios again.
Yeah.
Just going through it. But mate, I really love playing once a week. I really like being in that habit. I really love being in the groove. I like just it being the norm, you know, where it's like, see you again next week. You know, all that kind
of
stuff.
Is it the same time every week? Same day and time?
Yeah. Often. It's the same time as well. I mean, I'm like, like the guy who plays me is a really good guy. I know I peck him a little bit here, but he's a good guy. And my list of potential opponents is pretty small, like, because we start playing at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning. So like the list of people that want to, like, because we play at my school because we can use one of the big classrooms. So someone that's willing to travel, as you mentioned about your mate you came across from Glasgow, like that's rare. Not too many people want to do that. And someone that wants to come over and start at 8. So not even getting here at 8, like starting at 8. So he's regularly getting here like 7:15 in the morning. That's pretty good, man. It's pretty dedicated to do that. So if he went away or didn't want to play anymore, I don't know who I'd play. I don't know who I'd play at all. So I kind of need to cherish him a little bit and make sure I give him a back rub and, you know, give him a nice little cup of coffee in the morning or whatever. Because he does kind of does me a solid. But I think that works for him too. I don't think he's putting himself out too much because he's got a family as well. So he's got young kids. So I think getting out early while they're still asleep and then having a game and then getting back for kind of like lunchtime. We play from like 8 till 11 officially. So that works out pretty cool. But I do like playing each week because I just find that it really enables me to stay motivated with other things. Like, you know, I've painted over the last 2 weeks, I painted 3 new units of Baratheons. So it keeps me motivated because I'm only building lists from painted minis. So if I want to change my list up, I have to paint a unit because I'm not playing unpainted. So I wouldn't force that on anybody else, but that's like just a little thing that I put in place. So it's like to make sure. And it looks really good, man. You know, when you got a fully painted force, you know, it's it just looks really cool. And I never kind of say that to anybody else, but, you know, just inside, I'm quite satisfied that, you know, the units are painted, you know, all the basing's done, and it does look pretty cool. I do quite like it. But yeah, I do like playing every week. But I think we talked about it before about habits. As long as you kind of form a habit, and then it doesn't matter if that's once a month, it doesn't matter if it's quarterly, it's just good to have that little thing to look forward to. I think it gives you a little bit of an incentive, a little bit of a push to kind of get stuff done, or, you know, it gives you a chance to chat. Like, I mean, I really like chatting to you. So like, we arranged this, we've been trying to get this going for like 3 weeks. I think it kind of kept on getting pushed back, but it's just nice to have those things to look forward to. You know, I really enjoy those things to look forward to. Right.
When you, I was going to slack you off there. That was too easy.
It's fine, fine. Go ahead, because I slap you pretty hard, mate. So go on, feel free. Give me both barrels.
I was just going to say, you were talking about enjoying this. I've been trying to put it off for as long, but ran out of excuses. When you set your game up, like, do you get there early to set everything up,
yes,
or do you get there at the same time?
And no, mate. I think we talked about this when filming. We did talk about this, didn't we? Like, yeah, now I see it. Like, he's making a big effort to get across to me. So the deal is, like, he fires me a message when he sets off from home, and I'll go down to the classroom then, and then I'll set up the mat, set up all the tables, you know, I'll get everything out, get the train out, all that kind of stuff. And then so when it set my army up, so then as soon as he comes, we've just got a little bit of light chit chat while he's getting his army out. And then as soon as he's got his army out, we'll talk about I'll either agree the mission beforehand, or we'll speak about the mission, what mission he fancies. And if we agree the mission beforehand, I'll set up the objectives and stuff like that and do it. Yeah, because I think you got to be a nice host, don't you? If you're going to invite someone around to your house, you got to treat them nice, don't you? So it's, yeah, it's important to me to do that. Like, but he's loving it. He's loving it as well. Like, so I think he plays the free folk. So like, he quite likes the free folk. They've got all sorts of little beasties and stuff like that. So he quite likes it. And he's just buying up everything. So he's like in this, I think he bought up a whole bunch of GW stuff and is realized that like other games exist. So he's realized that other games exist, and he's sold a whole bunch of GW stuff. I think he had like 3 armies for Age of Sigmar, and he had a couple of armies for 40K. So he's like sold like the majority of that stuff off. So he's like just going, he's going crazy now. He's like, I'm gonna buy this faction, I'm gonna buy this faction. So I think he's got like 4 or 5 different armies now for a Song of Ice and Fire, because they're not that big. You know, you're only playing with about probably 7 or 8 activations split between like NCUs, which is just like 1 miniature on the side, and then units of 12. If it's cavalry, it's a unit of 4. So you know, I bought some Greyjoys recently, so it's only about 12 units. So they're not very big. You know, the force is not very big. So he's like loving it because it's like, it's cheap. It's like cheaper. It's cheaper than GW. Amazing. It take up much less space. So I was like, yeah, mate, just calm down. Like, and we were talking the other day, and I was like, mate, there's 52 weeks in a year. Like, we probably play about 35 games a year, probably, you know, with like losing holidays and sick days or whatever. So I was like, we probably play 35 games a year. So how many factions do you really need to play 35 games? It's like, if you say you've got 2 factions, that's still like just over 15 games a year. Like, you know, that 15 games, you probably really just get to know your faction. You really get to know your force. And so do you really need like 5? But I think he's just like, because to him, it's like, well, I'm not spending any money because I've sold these GW. Because the one thing that's great about GW is it always holds its value. Like, I hear it does anyway. So if you're selling GW, like, it goes fast and you're getting probably like 80% retail at least, right? I'm not sure do you know what your secondhand market's like, Grand? You? I guess you won't. Do you ever buy a dip into the secondhand market?
Nah, not at all, no.
No? Yeah, so the secondhand market for GW, you're probably getting like 80% of your money back. And if you bought something that's discounted anyway, you can sometimes flip some stuff. Like if you get a good deal, buy in secondhand, and then you can probably sell it for a little bit more, depending on stuff like new releases or whatever. But yeah, so he's kind of doesn't see it as he's spending his own money because he's like sold off all his stuff. So he's like kind of just getting involved in like everything. Like every time I see him, he's like, yeah, bought a new faction dinner. It's like, mate, calm down, like chill out. Like you don't need it. Oh, just put it away.
But is he quite cool. A prolific painter?
No. Not really. But that's okay. You know, everyone's different, right? But no, he's not really rocking the paint on it. But it's good to see him excited. You know, it's good to see him excited. It's good to see him because he talks about his lists and he talks about like stuff like that because, you know, it's interesting to see him kind of like finding his own way with his faction. The same way that I am, you know, I'm finding my way in my faction, know what units are good value proposition, which ones aren't, that kind of stuff. It's good. It's a nice little, like, you know, when you surf, I call it surfing the wave. It's like both of us are surfing the wave of the game and hopefully it continues for a while. But yeah, it's pretty good, man. It's pretty good. Yeah. So what else we got? So yeah, I don't know. But the thing is, talking about how I find out about stuff, like, I don't know if I'm doing it wrong, but I ain't got any idea what the release schedule is for like A Song of Ice and Fire. Like no idea. I ain't got any idea. Like I don't know what they're releasing like each month to the next. And I don't know if I'm just missing it or whether there just isn't a roadmap. I'm pretty sure there will be one somewhere, like, you know, coffee ring, like A4 sheet of paper on someone's desk. But I don't know what's coming out. Like they've released that Brotherhood Without Banners and that's like a mini faction. So that's like, you know, a core box with a few different things, but I couldn't tell you. You can't really plan ahead. So like, go back to flipping back to you and Hobgoblin. So what you said, you're building a chaos army. So what have you been using for your, what did you use for your first game? Cause you said you got two, right? Cause you said your mate hadn't got anything.
Yeah. I already had built two armies. So it was quite a unique situation where, I'd started building these armies before I even really knew about Hobgoblin. A stroke of luck, I guess.
That's a good thing, but it's not though, is it? Because you know, we talked about this before about gaming a genre and not a specific rule set. Yeah. So if you know 15 mil fantasy armies, there's probably 15 different rule sets that are pretty good that you can pick up and play. So you're playing a genre, which is really cool. So and then you just saw a rule set that you could then slot into it. So what are the ones you've been playing?
Mayhem, like you mentioned, played that a few times, liked it.
It's good, good that, innit? Yeah, it's good that, innit?
I wouldn't even say complicated, just different. There was a lot of stuff that did things differently, which it took a wee bit of getting used to, but I liked it. Kings of War as well was one that I, you know, played a few times, a few years ago. It's been a while since I played it, but I knew there was games that I could use the two armies, and I just wanted the aesthetic of having them both, so kind of human based army and a orc and goblin army, and now I've got this chaos one, so it's three of them in total.
Have you ever played Warmaster? Yeah, thought about Warmaster?
No, never. I've heard a lot about it, but never played it. No, did you like it?
Yeah, it's decent. I love Warmaster. Yeah, it's really cool. Do you ever play Blood Bowl?
Yeah, but not since like 1995. So
yeah, so you know, in Blood Bowl, like, you know, you activate different individual guys, and if they fail, that's the end of your turn. Right.
Mm.
So it's kind of similar in Warmaster where your general declares an order and then you roll dice, and then if you pass you get to execute the order, and then if you fail you get to do something, but then if you fail you still get to do something like that order. So if you were going to move, you get to move like half distance or something like that, right? But then that general can't issue any more orders. So it's really cool. So you can activate the same unit multiple times potentially, but it gets harder and harder to do so. And every order that your general issues, it gets harder and harder for him to order the next time. So like, you know, for example, if it's like you have to roll a five or more on the first order, it might be a six or more on the second, and so on and so forth. So you got like if you get a really good general, they're more likely statistically to be able to issue more orders in one go. But yeah, it's good, and yeah, it's pretty cool. But they support it still, like the community support it. It's Warmaster Revolution, I believe it's called. And there was a really good Swedish guy, I think he's a Swedish guy, Scandinavian guy anyway, for sure. And he, it's one of the good things about social media is I don't even know where I saw it, but he offered to do a big print run on the War Master Revolution rulebook. So if you go onto War Master Revolution, you can download the rulebook and you can download the army forces, like, for sure. But you have to print it yourself and then you have to, like, staple it together, which is fine, like, totally fine. But this guy, he decided to do a print run for everyone. So he just kind of put it out there and he just said, hey, if you want, I think he did Mordheim as well, I think, to be honest. He was like, I'm doing War Master, doing Mordheim. If you want a really well-printed book, really good quality book, give me a shout. I think it was like 20 quid a book. So I got him and he sent him across. That was pretty cool. But yeah, War Master Revolution is good. And I think a good thing about war gaming with a genre in it is that you're not beholden to a certain size base necessarily. You're not beholden to a certain brand. You know, you can shop around a little bit and you're much more able to pick and choose yourself, man. And like you've done, you know, you can make your own rule set too, right? You know, if you want to be super thrifty.
Yeah. Yeah. Aye, that's the thing. You've got an army, even if it is a Games Workshop army, like, you're not bound to their rules. You could use it for anything you want. So
yeah,
once you've painted an army, it's like, yeah, if you find a rule set that's interesting, you can give it a shot. It's not generally a lot of risk. So
value is something that you know, you very kindly allowed me to ask on the Discord. So we had a little think about value, didn't we, about how you can find value in the gaming hobby. The gaming hobby. Yeah, that's right. There you go, the gaming hobby. And that was really interesting. And a whole bunch of people have shown so many different ways that you can get so much value. If you just buy some miniatures in a certain genre, then the gaming hobby is incredibly, like, cost efficient, because all you need is a rule set. Then quite a lot of them you can download free, or quite a lot of them you can get for very, very cheap. Or you buy a book that's, say, $20, and you just keep that book and there's no new edition or there's no new updated version. It's just a really great game that just sits on your shelf and you can pull it off and play it, like, whenever you want, man. So that's really important to note in it when you game in a genre and not just a certain specific gaming rule set that might require, you know, buying of new editions or buying of, you know, army books and different stuff like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like, just think about it. Like, in theory, you could, is it EM4 or E4M is the site, and you get the orc in 20, it's like orc warriors, orc archers, dwarf spearmen and dwarf archers, and there's something like 20 pence each. So,
right,
like, in theory, you could build two big armies for, like, a fiver, and then you could get one page rules for free and just play them. So in theory, you could enter the hobby for like a fiver.
It depends on what you're into as well, doesn't it? I mean, if you're not really that bothered about miniatures, there are ways around it. There's a game called Onus. You ever heard of Onus?
O-N-U-S.
Yeah, close. But yeah, there's this game called Onus, and it's like a Roman Empire game. It's like a war game, proper war game, but there's no miniatures, it's just cards. So it's like tarot card sized units, maybe a little bit bigger. So on the card, it's just like a top down view of a unit. And so you just set up your cards and then you move your little cards around instead of your bases. And it's a rank and flank game, you know, you pivot and march and all that kind of stuff, but it's cards.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. It's a good idea, that. It's a good idea.
Yeah,
I like it.
Especially if you're at that really, I mean, I'm not sure of what the intended scale is, but you see very zoomed out scales, like 2 mil. And in theory, there are miniatures on the units, but really it's just little bumps that you dry brush from what I could see. So I'm still getting the same outcome.
It's something that's good as well. I'm not sure if it does it in that particular game. I'm not looked too closely at it because I don't necessarily need a new game. But there's another game called Battle Lore. So you know about Memoir 44 that I've talked about, but there's like a fantasy battle version of it called Battle Lore. And when you're using that has got miniatures, but the way that they deploy is really cool. So when you don't necessarily have the miniatures, in that Battle Lore game, you have like a set of tiles, like hexagonal tiles, and you place the hexagonal tiles face down on the battlefield, and you got a certain amount of your units that are like your units that you're going to deploy, but then you got a certain amount of fakes. So what you do is you deploy your forces, all the units have had these hexagonal cards kind of face down, and then so you're placing units, but your opponent doesn't know where they put them. Because I always think that with war games, like, one of the biggest things that kind of sucks is that I can see you deploying and you can see me deploying, and there's no surprise. There is a little bit of tactics from there. It's like alternate deploy, like I'll deploy a unit, you deploy a unit, I deploy a unit, you deploy a unit, right? But I think that's a really good mechanic that I like to see in more war games, is that some sort of blind deployment where you deploy and then it's revealed later where you actually deployed your units. Does that kind of make sense? I think that's a mechanic that's not utilized. Or I'm not, either it isn't, or I've just not seen it. Are you aware of any games that has like a blind deployment?
I actually, coincidentally, have seen it quite a lot. Been rereading all my White Dwarfs for the 90s, and it did happen in a few battle reports, especially the large-scale stuff. Like, they just got a big blanket and like hung it between. So it was literally like the reveal moment. And I remember some of the folks that were playing, you know, writing up in their comments that like my heart sank when the curtain was pulled away and I realized, you know, my archers were in a completely useless position and I'd left myself really exposed on this side. So I thought that was really cool.
That'd be so, I'd like to see more of that, I think. Yeah, because that's a kind of unexploited area of the hobby, I would say. The games, like, you know, this blind deployment where you know the units, you know what units you're going to be facing, and you know your opponent. If you know your opponent well, you know your opponent, maybe what they've done before in the past. But yeah, a certain amount of like a blind deployment would be pretty cool to but if anyone knows of one, that'd be cool. I'd like to know, but I'm not sure if Onus does that, but I know that Battlelore does for sure. And Battlelore is good because it's like technically it's a fantasy battle game, but it's on a hexagonal board and all of the units are on move around from hexagon to hexagon, so it's a little bit smaller footprint, and it's you still get the fantasy battle feeling, but you don't have the sprawling 6x4 really. But yeah, that's cool, man. Well, anyway, we're running out of time, eh? You're a busy man and you're got stuff to do. Have you got anything else you want to talk about to round us out?
No, it's been a really good chat. Like I say, I couldn't put you off any longer. So hopefully that keeps you happy for another couple of months till you're chatting down my door. So hi, who's next on your show, Dan?
Tim Prow is coming up this Friday. So I'm not sure when this is going to be. Not sure when this is going to be released, but Tim Prow. I had to stop. You know, you remember that Simpsons episode where he opens a snowplow business and he makes
Mr. Plow.
Yeah, Mr. Plow. He's like, Mr. Plow, that name again. It's Mr. Plow. I had to not do that in the show because I was like, it's Mr. Prow. And I very nearly went, it's Mr. Prow. Mr. Prow. But I was like, I don't know you well enough yet, Tim, so I won't do that. So I'm not sure if he's going to listen to this. But yeah, I went to extreme lengths to avoid offending you, Tim. So yeah, so Tim Prow is on this Friday, the 28th. Then we've got a gentleman called Vamps. He's coming out on April the 4th. He did a really good video on YouTube. His name's Count Vamps. That's the name he goes by. But he did a really good video on YouTube about value. He actually worked out, he went through GW, Mantic, Warlord. He went through a whole bunch of companies and said, if I was to start one of your games from buying off the shelf, this is how much it would cost. For like a regular size point thing. And it's really interesting. It's really interesting because you see the numbers. And it's not a case of like hating on any individual company or whatever, but it was just really interesting seeing the price differences for buy-in to certain games. Now, obviously, ultimately, as long as you're happy and as long as you're having a good time, it doesn't really matter how much it is, right? You know, if you're getting joy, if you're getting value out of whatever it is you buy, then it's totally fine. But he actually went through and crunched all the numbers that if he was to go and buy these games off the shelf, with all the points values to play, like the considered average point value game, like how much you would need. Now, it's a really good video. So he's on April the 4th. And then April 11th, I speak to Mike Tunias of Firelock Games. We kind of talk about some things that they've been doing. So, you know, you probably know them from Blood and Plunder, which is like a kind of pirate era skirmish game. But what they've also done is they've put together a load of really great games, which are not the same rule set, but similar types of rules from Blood and Plunder, but slightly different based on different genres now. So they've got Blood and Valor, which is like a World War One kind of skirmish game. They've got Blood and Bayonets, which is like a kind of Black Powder Napoleonic era. They've got loads of other different types of games in different genres, and they're mostly mini agnostic as well. So they do produce some miniatures for certain games, but they also do, you don't have to have miniatures from them. So there's like a Hundred Years War type one. I can't remember what that one is. There's all sorts, really, really good, really good. So yeah, he's coming on. He's always a good guy. And he does a lot of stuff. Like he is technically a pirate, I think. So he dresses up in like pirate gear in his spare time, and he also goes out sailing loads. So we spent a long time just talking about some hairy moments that he's had on when he's gone out on his boat, which is pretty cool. Yeah, so that's it. That's the next three that are coming up. But yeah, it's fun just putting them together and trying to find different people that have got different different stories or different angles, or they look at things in a slightly different way. I really want to put together some more of those Why I Love podcasts. Probably my favorite ones to do are the Why I Love podcast, which is where someone who's played a game a lot and they just want to come on and talk about why they love that particular game. So if any of your listeners really love a certain game and they want to maybe potentially reach out and talk to me about why they love a certain game, I'd love to do that, because those are the ones I love most. I think if I could choose to do one over others, that those ones are always the best, because it's just really nice here, because we know, both of us know, it's hard to play games, right? But someone that's invested like a heck of a lot of time to play one game a lot and just hear it, like, a little bit like me with the Song of Ice and Fire, but not me talking about Song of Ice and Fire, just someone that's as excited about a different game as I am about Song of Ice and Fire is always good to listen to. So yeah, so I'll say, but yeah, cool, man. So it's good fun. But anyway, thanks. I appreciate you inviting me on. I appreciate your patience with me. You're very kind. You're very patient.
Whenever keep it coming. I ask you to come on.
But anyway, so yeah, what you do this weekend? Anyway, let's finish up on this weekend. So we're talking on Wednesday, Tuesday. Talking on Tuesday, what you got coming up this weekend?
Nothing hobby related. It'll just be, well, it's Mother's Day. It's Mother's Day here on Sunday. And the wee one, we painted up she painted a card. She's a better painter than me, obviously. So I let her do it. So I've made a card. It's very abstract what she's done. It looks like a sort of Lovecraftian portal to another dimension, and there's a bit of glitter on there as well. So, yeah. And I got the wife some chocolate Brazil nuts because she likes those. And I like them too, actually. So I'll probably eat at least 60% of them. And they didn't cost very much, was my primary motivation. So,
mate, there's not many like you around. I'll tell you that.
Absolutely. The world's a better place for it.
All right, mate. Well, take it easy. I'll speak to you again soon.
Cheers, Dan. Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.